Welcome back. Hour number two, Betting Across America, presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard with you from Las Vegas, Nevada. James Salinas hosting from Denver, Colorado, and pleased to be joined by Luke Jones, WNST, out there in Baltimore. Luke, welcome to the program. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. Our pleasure. Certainly. I want to get some intel for this football game. I think everybody's going to be watching this game, rushing home to watch this game. You think about Baltimore as a home favorite, -3.5, total 55.5. Luke, this culture thing that Harbaugh has created, you get in the buy-in. Some guys, does not buy in. You think about the Earl Thomases, they're gone, but the Marcus Peters, they're still there. Talk about this culture and how strong it is and vital to the success of the Baltimore Ravens right now.
Well, I mean, I think you look at it, you have a head coach who's been with the Ravens 13 years, won a Super Bowl, has joined the end of the Ray Lewis, Ed Reed era, kind of transitioned to the Joe Flacco era post-Super Bowl 47, which didn't have a whole lot of success as it related to January. But this is a head coach who's willing to reinvent himself in terms of coaching. And we've seen that with going for it on fourth down, things of that nature. And he, as much as he has very clear expectations, and you just said it, I mean, someone like an Earl Thomas did not fulfill those expectations from a culture standpoint. He is someone who really values input from his players, and more specifically, his veteran players. So when you have a core group of veterans, which the Ravens have had, and some of them have moved on here over the last couple of years, but then you plug in Lamar Jackson, you plug in some of the other young, talented players they have that are, first of all, really good players, but also guys that buy in. They buy into the team concept. They're good locker room guys. And you have success. That's when you have that budding, blossoming culture that the Ravens have really, I think they've had a good culture for a long time, but the success, I mean, you look at it, 22-3 in the regular season since Lamar Jackson took over and doing something different, embracing being, zigging while everyone else zags. I mean, that's been the talk of what the Ravens have done these last couple years. But it really does begin and end with John Harbaugh and his willingness to adapt and really value what his players have to say and adjust accordingly when needed to.
Hi, Luke. Hey, James Salinas out here in Denver, Colorado. Thank you for taking the time with us today. So Monday Night Football, we know it's a big game. The Chiefs are getting everybody's, as a defending champion, the Chiefs are going to get everybody's best shot. And I suspect for the Ravens, this was something that they circled on their calendar when they saw this schedule come out. Now, especially if, I feel like last year in the playoffs, they were kind of looking ahead to this game as the AFC Championship game. So obviously the vibe is going to be very strong. No fans in the stands tonight at home for the Ravens, but any pressure on the Ravens to feel like if this is a huge game for them and a statement game for them, that if they lose, kind of where do you kind of see where their psyche is and their mindset going based on how much pressure I feel like they're going to put on themselves to win this game tonight?
You know, it's a really interesting question. I wrote about that this week. I talked about it on the air a bunch. I think you look at the Ravens since Lamar Jackson took over, there's really two things that you can point to that are inconvenient truths for them. They're 0-2 in the postseason. They can't do anything about that for another 3 months. I mean, that's just there. The criticism's going to be there for Lamar Jackson and for this team not winning a playoff game. And then the other piece that you can look at is they haven't beaten Kansas City. They took them to overtime 2 years ago, Lamar's rookie year. Defense played really well. Offense played well, but not well enough, and they lose in overtime. Last year, the offense answered the bell a little bit more, but their defense wasn't as good, and they give up 33 points. So I think there's a healthy balance here, and Marcus Peters said it this week. Look, this is a big game. Everyone's excited, but we also understand it's week three. And just if they win or lose, there's still so many different directions this season can go. But I do think when you're talking about a team that went 14-2 last year, you just said it, and Lamar Jackson acknowledged it back in the spring. He thought they got caught peeking ahead a little bit. No one really thought the Tennessee Titans were going to beat them, and everyone was ready for Kansas City to come to town the following week. So I would say before the schedule even came out, they knew they were going to play Kansas City. I'd say the day after that loss to Tennessee in the playoffs, they circled this game. I do think it's an opportunity for them to have a coming-of-age moment if a 14-2 team can have something of that nature. But I do think there is a sense of they set so many records last year. They won 12 straight to close the regular season, NFL best 14-2. Their point differential was the best in the NFL since the 2007 Patriots. what else can they really accomplish in the regular season other than in week three, playing the Kansas City Chiefs, knowing there's a good chance you're going to cross paths again in January if the season goes how we expect it to. This is kind of the one checkpoint accomplishment that they can, you know, kind of have that notch on their belt to say, all right, we didn't get it done last year. Well, some players even said they choked in the playoffs. I mean, let's call it what it was. But you topple Kansas City, you've got the inside track to the number one seed. You have the inside track to home field advantage, which is even more important this year with just one first round bye. So I don't think it cripples them if they don't win it, but it's a long 3-month journey then to the playoffs where anything they do, no matter how many games they win, there's always going to be that certain segment of detractors that say, well, you didn't beat Kansas City, and all these wins are nice, but until you do it in January, it's still going to feel a little bit hollow, and they can't really argue against that until they get to that point to be able to prove otherwise.
Luke Jones, WNST in Baltimore, is with us right now, betting across America. Luke, question about sense of urgency, and you kind of laid that out a little bit right there. When it comes to Lamar Jackson, it comes to Pittsburgh Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger is back. They're off to a 3-0 start within that division. Certainly, it'd be nice to beat Kansas City, but I think the eye on the prize is to win that division. And then also the sense of urgency because of Greg Roman. I think Greg Roman's going to be a hot coaching candidate next year. And maybe the Baltimore Ravens have to get to that Super Bowl before he leaves.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I'd even throw Wink Martindale, their defensive coordinator. When you look at some of the success they've had defensively the last couple of years, I mean, last year they had to rebuild their inside linebacker group in the middle of the season. It was really a problem. So there is that. I think there's already a sense. I mean, Ronnie Stanley, their all-pro left tackle, is going to be a free agent after this year. Marlon Humphrey, who, for my money, is one of the best 4 or 5 corners in the NFL, is a year away from free agency. Lamar Jackson, of course, you're going to be paying him at some point in the next 12 to 18 months, you'd expect. So this team that has been so successful over the last year plus is going to get pretty darn expensive pretty soon. So I do think there is some urgency. And even with what happened to them last year, being the best team in the regular season last year and not even winning a playoff game, I think there is some urgency. Not that anyone's job is on the line. I think that would be way too harsh, way too much of an overreaction. But I think there is a sense that, not that the window will close, because I don't think it'll ever close with Lamar Jackson as their quarterback, really, but maybe in terms of having that wide open, incredible window, incredible opportunity to win, and then you throw Greg Roman into that conversation, and even Wink Martindale, their defensive coordinator. So this definitely feels like their absolute best chance. And then in subsequent years, I think they'll still have a darn good chance, but you feel like the probability will be a little bit less just because they'll have whether it's coaching departures, player attrition, free agent departures, and what's sure to be a much tighter salary cap here over the next 2 to 3 years.
Hey, Luke, so I'm looking at this game tonight, and I'm looking at matchups, and I'm looking at the Ravens got much younger at linebacker. You know, they drafted Harrison and Patrick Queen really high, but playing the Chiefs, we know Andy Reid, he's always got some new formations and tricks up his sleeve. I think Kelsey's the toughest matchup when we're talking about tight end position because he doesn't just play at the tight end. He'll line up wide, trying to match up with not only Kelsey moving around on the offensive side, but also Clyde Edwards Hilaire and his ability to not only run the football, but be able to catch the football and get out in space. I'm wondering, how do you see this matchup with both Kelsey and Hilaire matching up with those young linebackers for the Ravens?
Well, I think it's a great question. It's something I addressed in my predictions blog earlier today at our station website. I think you look at Kelsey, first of all, he's had good games against him the last couple of years. He's a matchup nightmare for just about any team, let's face it. I think prior to the injury to their slot cornerback, Tavon Young, last week, suffered a torn ACL. They put him on IR. They probably, because the Ravens run a ton of dime looks, whether it's safeties, whether it's four corners, they like to have 6 defensive backs on the field. And I think Jimmy Smith, their veteran corner, who had kind of been tabbed to be more of a hybrid safety / corner, I would have expected him to get a lot of the coverage duties with Kelsey. Now, he still could get that, but to your point, you have young corners. are young linebackers in Queen, who has flashed and looked really good at times, but in pass coverage, as you'd expect from a 21-year-old rookie who was only a starter for 1 year at LSU, he's had some times where the coverage hasn't been as good. So I think it's going to be a mix and match, but I'm glad you brought up the point. I mean, Kelce, I think, is a given that that's going to be a challenge, and we'll see how they play that. I think it'll be multiple guys, you know, depending on what they're doing from a defensive standpoint. But Edwards-Helaire, I think one thing about the Ravens, they blitz more than anyone in the NFL. I mean, last year they blitzed roughly half on half of the passing snaps they faced. They're a team that loves the blitz. And Andy Reid, we know, does a better job or as well of a job as any play caller in football at looking at what teams do from a tendency standpoint, looking at what weaknesses might be or relative weaknesses in this case, and seeing that the Ravens rely on the blitz a ton. The four-man rush typically doesn't get there. They have used their backs very effectively the last couple of years, whether it was Damian Williams, whether it was a late-stage career Shady McCoy last year. They threw to their backs quite a bit. The difference is Edwards-Helaire, to me, gives them that game-changing potential that they haven't had since Kareem Hunt was let go a couple of years ago. So I think with the Ravens' tendency to blitz, again, that's one that you want to make sure your linebackers are playing disciplined. You want to make sure they don't get caught peeking in the backfield, because I could easily see Edwards-Helaire, you know, or whoever's lining up in the backfield, squeaking out of the backfield. And that's something that's given them problems over the last two meetings with Kansas City.
Man, I cannot wait for this game tonight. Big boy game. That's what I want to call it. The Chiefs versus Ravens is coming up on Monday Night Football a little bit later. Luke, that was awesome. Thanks for your time today.
Appreciate it, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
You too. You do the same. That was Luke Jones from WNST out there in Baltimore. Great breakdown right there. James, you think about this game too. Interesting props. You got Patrick Mahomes out there at 291.5 for passing yards, 1.5 passing touchdowns. And then Lamar Jackson, 249.5 passing yards, 1.5 passing touchdowns, 62.4 rushing yards. Interesting numbers there. Then other players are certainly Mark Andrews at 54.5 from reception yards. Tyreek Hill, 67.5 as well as receiving yards.
Well, and I love his point about those linebackers. They are young. It is young. There's been a change. We talked about culture, and he was great with his point of talking about that culture. And it really starts with Harbaugh, obviously, but he listens to his players, and they made those changes with moved on from Earl Thomas and some of those things that have happened in the past that brought a little dysfunction to the team. But it is a young team. And Andy Reid, he's watching film, too. He's doing plenty of study. I was digging into some more of these props when we were talking about Kelce. I think Kelce has a big game tonight. His prop is 69.5 yards receiving. I like that going over, as well as Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, that kid is really impressive in space, and his prop is only 25 yards over receiving. I'm not sure what the running game is going to look like. I don't know. I mean, that I feel like that defensive front for Baltimore is pretty stout, so Andy Reid may shift away from doing as much running as he did, especially when we saw them play, and he had a great game against Houston. I don't know if he's going to get that many touches, talking about Helaire in the backfield, as far as running the football, but I think being able to catch the ball out in space, and just like Luke talked about, blitzing, and there's opportunities where you're going to be in single coverage out in the flat, and these young linebackers are going to have to be disciplined in their space, and as shifty as that young kid is, I'm really leaning towards the over for both not only Helaire, but also with Kelce tonight.
Yeah, you know, earlier in the show, I mentioned how Kansas City, the comments out of there were that they were out of sync against the Chargers. They felt like they need to get this offense revved up, and once we see this offense and they get going, though, James, it's showtime Lakers, right? You can't stop them. You can't stop Patrick Mahomes, but maybe a wide open game plan, trying to get that offense going, getting gear, and then on the other side, Lamar Jackson, they already have it going too. So if it is a back and forth game, I can see some of those prop bets definitely coming into effect in this matchup.
Well, and we'll see what that game plan looks like for Baltimore tonight. Are they going to – the best offense against – the best defense against the Chiefs is to keep their offense on the sideline. So that means your offense has got to play ball control. And we know the Ravens are definitely going to run the football and try to do ball control. But if it does start to tend to get into a shootout, does Greg Roman – does he start to say, "What? Look, we need to try to match point for point. We can throw the football too. I'm creative as an OC, and we can get some big plays down in the passing game." And they do have some playmakers playmakers out there with the ability to do that. And Jackson kind of wanting to prove himself too, that he is more than just a running quarterback, because he does have arm strength and he is pretty accurate. I like him as a passer. If they get caught up into that and they get caught up to where it is a quick strike game, and we've seen that throughout the league where it is big play after big play. You know, there are no fans and not much of the fans in the stands tonight. So that's going to influence the offense as well and really have an impact in a positive way for Kansas City, because they're not going to have that crowd noise to have to deal with. It's going to be a challenge. I love the game. This is going to be a great game. I'm excited to watch it, and big plays abound tonight.
Absolutely, and looking forward to big games or big plays in the running game too. When you think about it, both teams are very explosive. Whether it's Hilaire or Ingram or Lamar Jackson, we could see some big plays in the running game too, which makes it that much more exciting. Coming up next here on Betting Across America, as we continue right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, James and I are going to dive into hockey and think about the chances, or talk about the chances, certainly, of Tampa Bay closing out the Dallas Stars. That's coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Welcome back to the program, Betting Across America, presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard with you from Las Vegas, Nevada. James Salinas out in Denver, Colorado. And James, we got game six of the Stanley Cup Finals. Tampa Bay with a chance to lift the cup. Chances that the Stars can extend this series in a must-win situation.
Well, how resilient is this Stars team? After losing the way they lost game four and the penalties and the things that happened there, and then not having any time to have to rest and recuperate and refocus yourself, because it was a back-to-back from Friday to Saturday, from game four to game five. And then coming back in the third period, they were down. They actually, you know, Tampa had a goal lead in that game to finish out, not too, you know, just a few minutes away from hoisting the Stanley Cup. And Dallas fighting, battling, competing, playing defense, and not giving in, not giving up. This team is really resilient. It's right now, it's hard to go against them. They've been fun to watch in this bubble, in these playoffs, and they're still continuing to compete. If ever there was a time that they could have folded, especially being down late, that was about the time where Tampa could have been celebrating and been done with this right now. And I'm sure they're looking at it saying, man, we can't get rid of these guys. They're still hanging around. Here they are. And the fact that it's still a pretty big price point. I mean, the Stars are, you're laying a good price on the Lightning. You're getting a good price with the Stars to come back at 145. I mean, I'm definitely leaning this way. The total at 5, it's juiced pretty high at 140, juice 40 cents to the over. It's hard to go under. None of these games have gone under. They've either pushed or gone over the total for these first 5 games. Yeah, I don't like the juice there, so I'm not going to play the under in this case. But I think I'm going to lean towards the Stars in this, especially with that price point at 145.
You know, this match or this series has been interesting to me because of the way Tampa Bay has responded with quick strikes, certainly, and taking advantage of the aggressive style from the Dallas Stars on the ice, with the Stars playing more discipline too, but then also battling back, like you mentioned. It's been one of those series. You know, Dallas has been in these situations in terms of these must-win situations. You think about Tampa Bay pushed a little bit previous series, but the Stars have been through it. So I think a lot of people might be rooting for a game seven in the Stanley Cup Finals. That's for sure.
Well, and maybe that's it. Maybe I want to see game seven. Who doesn't? I mean, that's the best in all sports, regardless of whatever sport you're looking at. Game seven, baseball, hockey, basketball, you name it. Game sevens are great. So maybe there's a part of me as just a sports fan and a hockey fan, playoff hockey fan, that I want to see a game seven. But, you know, Seguin has been great. So has been Joe Pavelski. He got a goal in. I'm rooting for him. I like him. And I'm going to take that side. I'm definitely going with the number with 145 and taking that dog. dog tonight in the Stars to get us to a game seven, and then we'll have some real fun to close out the hockey and the Stanley Cup championship in the bubble.
In the bubble, right? That's the payoff. I'm sure these guys want to get the hell out of the bubble, but it's been fantastic, the action. I can appreciate it. I can appreciate these athletes being in the bubble for this long. And then having to compete at this level in order to get a championship. So watching this, it's so interesting to me. But then you got to gear up for next year. You know, you're going to enjoy the cup, that's for sure. But now you're making plans for next season already. So it's just an interesting dynamic right now.
Well, and I think the Star, especially from the Stars' perspective, they've come too far. It's been worked too hard, too long, lived in this bubble and been sequestered in the Great White North for too long to lay down tonight. Obviously, they're not going to lay down tonight, but you're going to get a great effort. You're going to get a great effort out of both teams. Obviously, Tampa wants to close this out. Mm-hmm. Then the pressure's on them. You're the favorite. And if this goes to Game 7, how much more pressure do they feel as that big favorite that you had opportunities to close it out in Game 5. If they don't win tonight, don't close it out Game 6. Now all the pressure is squarely on the shoulders of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So that's going to be interesting to see, too. I hope we get there. I hope the Dallas Stars win tonight, and we do see that Game 7.
Yeah, Game 7 Stanley Cup Finals, they coincide with each other right there. So definitely want to see that. Real quick, I got a minute left, James. I wanted to ask you, I wanted to say something to you about Cleveland. Three games in, Andrew Siciliano, he actually tweeted this out. Through three games, this is the first time that the Cleveland Browns have been above 500 since 2011. I mean, that's incredible to me.
Well, you got to find something to be excited about, right?
Right.
They haven't won. Oh. It's been a disaster there in Cleveland. So, yay, good for them. Yeah, you beat up on Washington, who has absolutely no offense. But you'll take what you can get at this point, where any win is a good win, and any kind of momentum, regardless of who you played this, especially early in the season. All right, good for the Browns. Enjoy it.
Good for you. But
have your champagne and enjoy it for now. We'll see you next week.
I know.
Week
three four. Games in, you're above 500. Go celebrate. James and I will stay with the NFL as Betting Across America continues right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. How did your football betting go this weekend? As you know, there's always room to improve your sports betting IQ, and VSiN is here to help you bet smarter this season. Start your 7-day risk-free trial and place your next bet with confidence. Sign up today and you'll get Point Spread Weekly, which is our digital betting guide with NFL power ratings and picks from our experts 24/7, live video streaming with full replays of all VSiN shows, the college football betting guide with previews, predictions, and betting strategies, daily emails with best bets from all of our shows, hosts, and guests. Plus, you can always access our parlay calculator, prop bet search engine, and pick tracker on VSiN.com. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to start your risk-free trial today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Welcome back to the program, Betting Across America, presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard with you. James Salinas out in Denver, Colorado, with you as well. And James getting back into the National Football League. The hoodie, I don't think people want to bet against him. Bill Belichick does it again. I mean, he just breaks down the opponent so well, as you saw New England take on the Las Vegas Raiders and really just take apart that football team on a short week traveling across country as well.
Well, and there were some injuries too. So it was, that's a tough spot for the Raiders. That was pretty well documented as far as big win, especially coming to Las Vegas, new stadium, get that win over a quality team when we're talking about the Saints, and then having to travel and go play Belichick, who just came off a tough loss, last play 1 yard away from winning that game in Seattle. So definitely we're motivated to fix what was wrong and make it right. I was kind of impressed with the Raiders, though, at least for the first half. They competed. It wasn't just the buzzsaw. I know the score kind of got away from them in the second half. And part of that was again, coaches, and these are one of the things talking about handicapping, not only handicapping the matchups and the players and the injuries, all these kind of things, then you got to handicap coaches and their decisions of what they're going to do as these games progress, especially fourth quarter decisions that they make. And, you know, the Raiders are down 13. They're in the red zone, fourth down. There's our fourth quarter, maybe 10, 12 minutes left in the game, and they decide to kick the field goal and cut it to 10. It's still two touchdowns. You still need two scores. I don't understand this, well, let's keep it close and maybe something will happen for us late in the game that'll go our way, when that's your chance to win. Are you, do you really think you're going to come back down to that red zone again and be able to score? I think that's where showing aggression needs to happen, not early in the game. I think we see teams being aggressive early in the game, maybe going for it on fourth and one somewhere at midfield, but that's early in the game. What do they do? What are they doing late in games? And when we're talking about kicking field goals, when you're down basically two touchdowns, you know how I feel about these field goal kickers, whether it's them kicking or even the decisions to make it. Field goal kicking's for losers. You got to go for seven. And I think that hurt them. That hurt the Raiders on Sunday as well.
Kind of surprising from John Gruden too, right? I mean, I didn't expect that decision at all.
Well, and maybe that's just the moment. Maybe you didn't expect to be in the game. I don't know. That's the track record with coaches. It's hard to just figure out. You can see a track record. Do they do for that? Like Harbaugh, he's aggressive for things too. But what happens in late game situations? We'll get to find out tonight if it comes down to that or other games going forward. These situations pop up week in and week out, and we see coaches and what decisions they make. Are they going to go for it on fourth and one? Or are they going to punt? Or should they go for the end zone? Or are they going to kick a three? So many different things when it comes to coaching decisions late in games. Can they manage the clock? Are they utilizing their timeouts well? Can they do the math? So many of these things factor into it. So part of the handicapping process, Pritch, really has to start with the coaches and what do they do in late game situations. That's important to know too.
Absolutely. And you think about that line open at -6.5, close at -7 for New England. And you think about Belichick in that second half. I mean, he burned all his timeouts just to make sure that his defense was going to run the right defense, that they were aligned properly and certainly knew what to do out there. So that's a guy who was aggressive, just making sure he could secure a victory. The Raiders D allowing an average of 406 yards, James, on, you know, that's incredible to me. Ranked 26th in the National Football League currently.
Well, and especially on the ground. And we know they've got their small front. The front four is not very big. They obviously don't get a lot of pressure either. But as far as stopping the run, Kiwakowski was out at the linebacker position. So they're not very stout up front. So that's always a struggle for them. And I think you started to see some bigger plays. Sony Michel in that third and fourth quarter, especially late in the game, started to break off some bigger runs. Maybe there was some fatigue from the Raiders there, just kind of getting pushed around for three-plus quarters, where they are susceptible to that. And that's not something that's going to change. That's not going to change this year. They're not going to find other personnel to come plug and play that all of a sudden are going to be stout run stoppers. That's their biggest weakness, is stopping the run. And eventually New England went and figured that out. They did pretty well against Cam Newton. He looked a little human when he was throwing the football. It wasn't the big light it up like he had last week against Seattle. It was kind of pedestrian numbers for them. But obviously the game plan later as the game progressed was really pound at their weakness for the Raiders and run the football.
Just get out to Denver Buccaneers, Tom Brady out there. Some people thought that Tom Brady does not play well in Denver, but I think you got to consider the opponent. The Denver Broncos at home typically plays very hard, very strong, and maybe they could cover. You think about that line too, opened up Tampa Bay -3.5, closed -6 there for the Buccaneers. But Tom Brady played well. The Denver Broncos did not play well at home.
Well, and I mean, I think the Broncos are auditioning for quarterbacks this week. Come and try out. I know some people around the neighborhood. Maybe I'll tell them to show up at Empower Field and go talk to the coaches. I mean, they had to run through multiple quarterbacks yesterday. We knew Locke is out, but they were, the pressure that they were bringing, Denver's weakness was really exposed. I've been saying it. This has not been a strength for Denver for quite a while on the offensive line. Tampa can rush the passer. They've got a stout front four that can bring some heat. And every time I had a lot of games on, every time I was looking at that game, I'm seeing a Bronco quarterback underneath somebody from a Tampa Bay pass rush. I mean, it was just a nightmare for those quarterbacks. I don't know what Denver's going to do to change anything. I mean, the offensive line is what it is. A lot of moving pieces. Young, they're young at the center position. It's a rookie up front, but then the tackles are Bowles is struggling. They're all struggling, and those quarterbacks are paying for it right now. I don't know how Denver continues to score, and I think they have a game against the New York Jets this week on a short week. Fortunately, there's Major League Baseball playoffs are going to be kicking off this tomorrow, so we'll have some baseball action, and we may not have to suffer the fate of watching the Jets versus the Broncos on Thursday night.
Yeah, some people are calling it the Trevor Lawrence Bowl on Thursday night. I don't think Vic Fangio is going to get fired, but on the other side, you got Adam Gase. The crows are circling here, or whatever the phrase is in terms of what you think, dead man walking, whatever you want to use for Adam Gase right now, that's happening for him out there in New York. So a dud of a game coming up on Thursday night. We'll see another injury for Denver Broncos with Jarrell Casey, too, to keep an eye on. So that's that with the Broncos as we continue with Betting Across America right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. James and I will finalize our breakdown and recap of the National Football League. That's coming up next. September is showtime at BetMGM Sports, and they're offering new customers a chance to win $100 in free bets when they place a $1 wager on the Chiefs versus Ravens game. And if either team scores a touchdown, you win. Just sign up, make your first bet with bonus code VSIN100 to take advantage of this special offer. There's never been a better time to sign up at BetMGM Sports, the king of sportsbooks. Download the BetMGM app today and use promo code VSIN100 to win $100 when you bet $1 on the Chiefs versus Ravens. And if either team scores a touchdown, you win. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be at least 21 years old. Located in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, West Virginia. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. Welcome back to the program, Betting Across America, presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard, James Salinas with you today. And James, Philly, Cincy, interesting game. Got to overtime, ended up in a tie. Philly, not a good team. We knew that. Certainly Cincinnati, a team that's on the come up, I believe, when you think about Joe Burrow there, the young quarterback doing a fine job for the Bengals.
Well, yeah, talk about a beating. That kid took a beating yesterday. They sacked him 8 times. I don't know how many times they got hit. Forget about the hurries, how many hits he took, because it's one thing to get hit and you get pushed down. It was those hits where they're just there right as the ball is released, and they're landing full weight on top of that kid. They took some personal fouls, hitting him late, hitting him upstairs. Obviously, their mindset for Philly was to get after him early, get after him often, put him in the dirt, put him in the ground, try to intimidate him. Talk about a moxie for that kid. I mean, any place you go as a young quarterback and you're going to get throttled the way that they did to him, to Burrow yesterday. Good, a lot of moxie for that kid to fight back and bounce back and compete the way that he did. He had a really good game. You know, that offensive line is a disaster. If there's one strength for the Philadelphia Eagles, it is at the line of scrimmage on the defensive front, being able to put pressure on the quarterback. They did it all day. They harassed him. But on the opposite side, I mean, sorry, we just talked about, Pritch, we talked about coaching decisions. Mm-hmm. And what are coaches going to do in late game situations? Now, I know 64 yards, you know, they had an opportunity in the overtime to kick a 59-yard field goal, and Elliott's a pretty good kicker. They had a false start, pushing them back 5 yards. So instead of either attempting a 64-yard field goal or trying to make a deep pass, now it was fourth and long, they just elected to, all right, well, we'll kiss our sister and call it good, and we'll take the tie here and punt the football. There was only about 17 seconds left. So from that standpoint, I'm not sure whether you throw it or you kick it. I don't know the length of Elliott and whether he can make a long field goal like that. But basically what it tells me is that sends a message to your defense, even though they had harassed Joe Burrow all day long and put them in the dirt all day, that we don't trust you with 17 seconds left on the clock to be able to get off the field, make one or two stops here to save this game. So we'll just punt it away and live for another day.
Well, not only that, too, you know Carson Wentz, I don't know how much trust is with him either. That whole game plan that entire afternoon there for Philly, not indicative of a situation where you have a lot of trust between play caller and quarterback right there, and then certainly teammates either. I mean, the late score by Wentz, I think that was awesome. That was fantastic. But without a dominating run game or really any consistency running the football, all lies on the shoulders of Carson Wentz. And I'm just concerned about the trust there out there in Philly.
Well, the expectations for the Eagles team is always high. And, you know, they just off their recent Super Bowl win over New England a few years back, that really heightened the expectations in this city for that team, for that coach, and for this quarterback because, he wasn't there. He was hurt. So having to live up to that expectations, to follow in Foles' footsteps to finish out that season and to win that Super Bowl, I think there's a lot of expectations on Wentz. He puts a lot of pressure on himself, and he likes to play hero ball. He wants to hold that ball. He's not afraid to get hit. He's a big kid standing tall in that pocket, so he'll take those hits. But when you're holding the ball too long, I think he's forcing things like he has been, and his body's really beat up, and we're seeing that. Maybe there's some fundamental issues he's having with his mechanics of throwing the football, because he's airmailing some of these balls. He's not throwing the ball very accurately. Maybe all those injuries are really starting to that happens. You're never the same after you've been cut on by those surgeons. Your body's never quite the same, and he's had a lot of surgeries, a lot of injuries to that body, and he's not as young as he seems just based on the beatings that he's taken over his career.
Great point. And what about on the other side, Burrow, somebody who plays hard? You mentioned how tough he was. Cincinnati, they get the cover. You think about Burrow, I think for a rookie, he started off very well right now for the Bengals.
Well, I think he's definitely got some great leadership qualities just based on his toughness. His teammates will respect that about him. But taking the beating that he did yesterday, that's not a recipe to be able to play a full season in the NFL. They're going to have to make some adjustments. You can't have him throwing the football 40-plus times a game. He's going to take a beating. That offensive line is not good enough to hold up and sustain for a young rookie. Even though he's got the toughness to take it, physically that's going to take its toll, and he's not going to survive the season if they don't make some adjustments pretty quick.
Yeah, and they have a good running back too, Joe Mixon. I think they should be able to run the football. They're going to have to when the weather turns. Colts and the Jets. Everybody probably was on this game. The Colts take care of business. James, the Jets, they are miserable to watch, let alone cheer for, I'm sure, if you're a Jets fan. But the Colts taking care of business right there. Open -7. He got bet up to -12. Easy cover there for the Colts, even with that fact. Total 44, which was interesting how that closed down. But Jets... And the Colts, I think they got it going in the right direction, but again, they're playing the Jets.
Exactly, they are playing the Jets. So I'll temper the expectations with the Colts too. Who have the Colts beaten that have beat anybody? Again, a winless Minnesota team. They lost to Jacksonville. That's only Jacksonville's only win. They're 1-2 on the season. They lost down there to Jacksonville, and then you get to beat up on the Jets. It basically felt like a bye week for the Colts. The Colts have a lot of injuries, especially I think running back. I know Jonathan Taylor comes with a lot of hype from Wisconsin, but I saw some of those runs that he had. He missed some of those holes. He's just putting his head down and just trying to follow that mammoth offensive line, and they got a great offensive line. It's the strength of that team there for Indianapolis, but I'm not sold on this rookie being able to just carry up because Marlon Mack is gone with his Achilles, being able to step in there and carry on the running game that they'd like to do to have some balance on that offense to really take off some pressure from Rivers, because Rivers doesn't have the arm strength. He can't get the ball down the field. A lot of talk has been about Breeze, about Brady, about their arm strength. We're not hearing a whole lot about Rivers. I'm not sure if it's just Indy's not a public team. It's not a big name team. But Rivers definitely does not have the arm strength to stretch the ball down the field. If you look at his targets and you go through those box scores, I've seen his games plenty. I saw it that first week against Jacksonville. The first read is going, it's a 10-yard out to the receiver, or it's dump offs in the flat to running backs. There's not a whole lot there that he can stretch that field. And there's another one that might feel some pressure on him to play hero ball like Wentz. They're definitely going to be in a if they don't try to figure out a way to run that football. I'm not sure how Rivers sustains this season either, just based on making plays. Right now it's very condensed, very simple offense, but that's not a recipe to win throughout the rest of the season for another 13 games to go.
Sure, they're on the road against the Bears coming up too, so interesting to keep an eye on that matchup and find out more information about Rivers, certainly. And then you mentioned it too, the Broncos on the road against the Jets. I don't know what to make of this game. Short week Thursday night. Certainly there could be some betting angles here, I'm sure. But the Jets situation, reports that Adam Gase could be out after this game.
Well, that wouldn't be surprising, but then that just continues to lead to the dysfunction that follows him everywhere he goes. And, you know, the Jets are just a complete disaster. It's unfortunate that that's going to be the Thursday night game. I said it before, Pritch, I'm glad Major League Baseball, their playoffs, I'm glad baseball actually made it through their season. I know there were concerns early as the season started with COVID and teams going down and having to sit out for a week or so and make up games. And I'm glad it was able to sustain. They made it happen, and now the playoffs are here, and I think come Thursday night we're going to be very happy that Major League Baseball playoffs are in full swing, so we're not subjected to this as the only matchup for sports viewers on Thursday night.
How about the performance by the 49ers? Open -6.5, close -3. Some money coming in on the Giants there, but the Giants, no match for the 49ers in that game. The 49ers with a great, solid performance, even with all the injuries.
Well, they could roll out their JV team, and obviously, I think that's what they did. All the backups
did,
that had to play. There's another team that's just a disaster. I don't know which one is getting the bigger headline. Is it the Jets or the Giants out there? Obviously, there wasn't much expectation for either team, but it's New York City, and you know they all love a good controversy. And they definitely, as far as the media goes, love to report on. Betting against human achievement, and basically both teams are neck and neck right now when it comes to the Giants and the Jets for not achieving much of anything right now other than getting negative headlines in the press.
Yeah, they both stink. How about that? You know, before we close the show, I want to say this to you because you are big with the culture and certainly like to watch the coaches. One thing I want people to realize is, you know, some coaches can call plays, other coaches can develop. And certainly there's coaches that can build. You have to break down situations that's going on with franchises out there, whether or not Adam Gase can build a roster. No, he likes to call plays, you know, and you got to factor that in. You think about Quinn, can he develop players? Or is he a coach that can succeed with great players, right? So, like, you do that. You look at the coaching staffs and you break them that way as you determine a wager in any situation out there with the games.
Absolutely. It's totally important. You got to break down the coaches too, right? So that's part of the handicapping process. Like Harbaugh, I love both coaches tonight. We got Reed, we got Harbaugh. Terrific coaching matchup tonight. Not playing the side, I'd lean towards Kansas City just because there's no fans in the stands for Baltimore. Maybe more pressure on them. But I'm playing a couple of those props we discussed. I found a good one with Kelce. It's actually lowered. BetMGM, 67.5 yards over receiving. And I'm also going to go over 25 yards receiving for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think they take advantage of those young linebackers for the Ravens in space tonight.
Well, that's awesome. Good luck with those plays. We'll see you back on Thursday when Betting Across America continues later on in the week. That'll do it for us today. Josh Applebaum will be on the program tomorrow. Coming up next, my guys in the desert right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.